Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so happy that you are here and joining us for another episode. Today's guest is one of my favorite people. Her name is Amy Villasenor, and she is a good friend of mine who I met when we were both doing our diversity side hustle, volunteering for different employee networks back at Qualcomm. She has a passion for technologies that impact the way our societies function for the better and has spent multiple years working in software engineering on startup-like teams within larger companies. Now, she really enjoys thinking through people and organizational needs that lead to process improvement, operational efficiencies, and customer-centric strategy. Amy is currently working as a product manager on an AI platform, and I know that she is loving it, loving the challenge, loving the new space, loving the contributions that she can make to that team. In her free time, she looks for meaningful ways to give back to her community with a focus on exposing underserved students to STEM and higher education. Amy did an early stint as a Tecnolochica, which is a group that inspires Latina girls to take up their role and their welcome place in STEM. It is my great pleasure to introduce to you today, Amy Villasenor. So let's jump into the conversation. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I'm super excited to have this conversation with you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm very excited. Excited to hear what you have in store.
All right. Well, let's just jump right into these questions. Okay. So the first question is, Amy, what does it mean to you to be an activist in 2021?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I know as like the events of the last year and a half have just become, I guess, created a lot more noise in the public, and people are finally starting to pay attention to what's always been going on. I've been thinking about that. And I think one thing is it means standing up and speaking up, not just when people are watching and paying attention. I think that's when we get into trouble, when we wait for those moments. And I think that maybe, hopefully, that's what this past year has taught us, that we can't just keep avoiding things, because what happens is we end up in situations where we've ignored something for too long. And then it's not that it's too late. It's not like, you know, things were ever really good. But I think that if we don't start doing these things on the daily, which means like, you know, you're walking down the street and you see that someone is being harassed or something like that, right? You can't just look away, or you can't just walk away. Or even in a conversation at work where someone makes a rude comment and it's about maybe like a person of color or someone in the room, and you know that maybe you have a little bit the ability to say something, whereas that person might not. Like that's a moment to do so. And it's also the really small moments that we need to go for and not be afraid to say something.
I think this idea of not being afraid to act, and when we see something, like doing something in that moment. And I feel like for most people, we don't see the things that are like super overt. Like, yes, some people do, but I've never seen an Asian elder getting attacked. So I don't need to like necessarily prep myself for that. If I did then you do what you need to do in that moment. So I think it feels abstract to people sometimes, like, oh, I never am in these situations. But I feel like we actually are in the more subtle forms of discrimination, bias, and racism, like, all the time. Like that joke that someone tells or makes, and everyone kind of looks and laughs uncomfortably, and you don't want to be the one to say, you know, that's really sexist, because you don't want to be that person. But you should be that person, because other people are likely thinking it, and not saying something really just makes it okay. Even if it was an uncomfortable giggle from everyone, it's still okay that this thing was said in this public space, whether it's at work, at home, at school, anywhere in between.
Yeah. And I think it's getting comfortable with those uncomfortable moments. And I don't know, it's a test of a lot of relationships, right? Whether the person can take the feedback. Because it ends up being people that you were surrounded by, I'm assuming, like, maybe on the daily, or just least, they don't tend to be random strangers, right? So getting comfortable with the fact that you're going to have those uncomfortable moments, and you might not be friends anymore after it. But it's easier when you take a stand in your mind of how you're going to approach the situation beforehand, or when these things do come up. At least that's what's helped me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's sometimes where some of these things happen so quickly that you feel like you missed it. Like you missed the opportunity. You're like, wait, what the heck just happened? Like, this is all in your head. And you're like, and then before you know it, like, the topic has moved on and you didn't get a chance to interrupt this thing that happened. And I feel like in those moments, it's a wake up call for sure to be ready, but then it also kind of makes you that much more ready the next time you hear something like that, or the next time you're in a situation like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Amy, I want to talk to you a little bit about anti-racism. And it's a term that we've been throwing around a lot more over the last year or so. And when you hear the term anti-racist, like, what does that mean to you? And how do you see that fitting into activism? And sorry, I just gave you like a compound two-part question there, but I know you're a pro, so.
Yeah, I think anti-racism, you can't pick and choose what race you stand up for. I think that's the biggest thing, right? You know, we're seeing over this last year and a half different groups being very outwardly mistreated or very publicly mistreated. And we speak up maybe for one group and we speak up for the other, and then we don't speak up for the third, or maybe we're getting tired. But then the problem is, if we don't speak up for everyone, it just, like, even like one marginalized group doesn't mean that they will not marginalize or oppress another group. And I think that's where it starts becoming a problem, where we pick and choose, like, what groups are okay to be treated a certain way, what groups are not. And to me, being anti-racist truly means understanding that every group is going to experience this in one way or another. And the only way we're going to really fix it is just through humanity. I know that sounds very, like, fluffy, but the kindness that we can show anyone, regardless of, you know, what group they identify, or, like, being able to, like, define and identify your own biases, and being, you know, I think the person that you have to be most comfortable being uncomfortable with is yourself, and, like, you know, training yourself to really call you out on, you know, when you run across something and be like, we all have reactions, we all have biases, right? But I think it truly means checking yourself first, because you can't check other people otherwise. And we can't advocate for one group and then expect, or we can't advocate for our own group and expect that to work when we're not doing the same for other groups.
Yeah, absolutely. And this idea of, interrupting racism wherever you see it, no matter who it's happening to, because at a fundamental level, it's wrong. Discrimination is wrong. Like, these biases that are causing these racist outcomes are wrong. And it doesn't matter who it's happening to. It's like, killing is wrong, regardless of who is getting killed, right? I mean, that's what I believe. So, expressing that and acting in accordance with that too. And I think, you know, to your points of when we don't do that, it makes us hypocritical, number one, because how can you expect someone to help you if you're not willing to help them as well? And then it also almost creates like infighting, right? So, or a term that I've heard several times recently, like the oppression Olympics, like who's been the most oppressed for the longest and who's going to win this? Like this is not a competition that anyone can win or wants to win. Like what are the equality Olympics? What do those look like? That's what, you know, what we need to be talking about and not worrying as much about who is having it worse than the other. But when we have these opportunities to interrupt racism, bias, discrimination, that we always do it, and flexing that muscle and making those mistakes and learning what we need to do and what we need to know, and then being these role models, and modeling for other people who are at different phases. Earlier you mentioned that, you know, with the death of George Floyd and everything that's happened since then and before, you know, different people, especially our white allies, have started to recognize that this is happening, that racism is harming people left and right and center, and are wanting to get in and join the fray. And so being a model for people who are like, I'm not exactly sure how to get into this. Like, I'm not exactly sure what to do or say, and I'm afraid of doing or saying the wrong thing. So I'm just going to kind of sit on the sideline. Well, look around you at the people who are in the fray. It doesn't matter what race they are. If they're in the fray, if they're talking about anti-racism, talking about, you know, getting rid of our biases, talking about equity, like go watch and emulate, right?
Yeah. And you bring up a really good point up about allies too. I think one thing that I hear a lot is like, well, how can I help? How can I be an ally? Right. And you're asking this to the person who is being oppressed or the person who is being mistreated. And I think it's at that point, it's just like taking a step back and saying, for the most part, everyone has experienced some kind of bias, right? Let's say like, I don't know, as a woman, right, regardless of the race, you've experienced maybe sexism, right? In that moment, what do you want? You want someone to understand. You want someone to be able to put themselves in your shoes. And you already have so much to deal with emotionally that you can't even fathom sitting there and explaining to someone, creating a curriculum so that they can learn how to not, right? So it's like, what is the most human thing to do is think about what that person could be feeling in the moment. Try to put yourself in their shoes. How do you turn this into an empathetic moment so that you can truly understand and not put the burden on them? And I think that it's, you know, the whole activism thing, I think it's a little bit redefining it because it feels like such a large word and it feels like you have to go out into the streets and I don't know, just, you know, I think we have different visions because like, you know, there's been some great activism in the past and they've made a large splash, but that doesn't mean that like all the smaller pieces and the work that starts with yourself isn't just as important.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I love how you keep going back to like, it starts with yourself, because I also believe that that is true. Like we're looking at both trying to change our communities, but also trying to change these large systems, banking, finance, education, healthcare, et cetera, policing, government, et cetera, et cetera. Well, how can you go out and fix something when inside of you are the same like racist ideas and beliefs, even if you don't know it? We're in this society that is like sprinkled heavily, heavily seasoned with racist thoughts and ideas. And that gets on you regardless of whether you're, you know, a minority or not. And so how can you go back in and understand, okay, where are my biases to your earlier point? How can I replace those with more equitable and inclusive thoughts? And then how can I go out and like start fixing things so that I'm not fixing from this like broken perspective? And then of course, as a white ally, if you're not doing the inner work to understand how racism is showing up in your world and how racism is showing up inside of you, you can't be halfway as effective as you will be once you start to really understand what it looks like and have those honest, difficult, uncomfortable conversations with yourself, but then with also with your, you know, your peer groups, your family, you know, your work, et cetera, et cetera.
100%. Spot on. I agree.
So we've kind of been talking around this a little bit, but I would love to know a little bit about, you know, how you are living as an activist, as an anti-racist. Like, what are the kinds of change that you're creating in the world? And, you know, like you said, like, these don't have to be, I'm out here on the street, I started a foundation. Like, this work is like everyday stuff. Can you give us any examples of things that you're doing to help create positive change around you?
Yeah. I think for me, it's been a lot of conversations. And, you know, I think totally fair that it's a very personal choice to sometimes, like, you feel burdened by it and you don't want to have those conversations, right? And I can't say that I have the point where I haven't felt tired and I haven't taken a break. But I think at this point, right, like, I'm Latina, and I think, Latin America has a ton of colorism. And I think for me, it's like, I'm thankful and I'm blessed that, like, I can see beyond that. Mm-hmm. And that I've received an education that has helped me see so much beyond that and, like, see that it's a problem and how bad it is. So I think for me, it's like being very open about those things, like having conversations. So in the workplace, for example, like, we have a good amount of conversations about this. And I'm happy to always kind of share that perspective, share the perspective as Latina in the U.S., share a perspective as, like, a Latina who has, like, one parent who's, like, looks pretty white, and then another parent who, like, looks pretty Mexican, you know, by, you know, quote unquote, supposedly, like, look standards, and what that's been like, and just try to help educate people on what it means, how it affects people in the workplace. And also, honestly, you know, trying to help maybe lighten the burden on other groups where they always have to be the ones who are speaking up, especially, you know, the Black community has just seen so much the last year and a half. So where I can help provide some additional thoughts there, I do. I have these conversations at home a lot. My parents, I mean, they were not raised in the U.S., right? So all of this is, like, it's new to them. And we have uncomfortable conversations, and I don't hold back. And the same with anyone else in my family. And I understand that it's uncomfortable, right? It's probably uncomfortable for your child to, like, say, hey, like, these ideas that, like, generations have held, or, like, our entire country, like, holds, like, they're wrong. And we have difficult conversations, and I have to be comfortable with, like, you know, someone that you really respect not agreeing with you. And then, like, you know, you have uncomfortable silences, and then you work through it and you say, this is wrong. I'm not okay with this. You know, like, be more careful with the things that you say to who's listening, because, like, when you're kind of an authority figure, people are listening and people are internalizing it, and then they think it's okay. So it's been a lot of difficult and emotional conversations, for sure. So I'm definitely taking the route of starting from what's closest to me and where I can, you know, those smaller pieces. I think I would say the other big thing, honestly, was the election. Spent a good amount of time. I thought that was something that was very important. So did do some work there with some friends on, like, just informing the millennial population a little bit more on the actual issues. We realized, we came together as a group and we said, okay, we're decently educated, and there's so many issues that we don't understand. That's a problem. So, you know, the people who are claiming to be educated like we are, we need to get it. So we spent some time, like, you know, specifically targeting people like us, because we realized we were uneducated on the important issues and how they affected different populations. And that's also really important, because it's the populations that tend to be marginalized who are just, like, swept under the rug, right? Because they have less of a voice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's super interesting that you're like, you know, we're fairly educated, Miss Harvard MBA, which is amazing. I'm so proud of you for that. And for the example that you're setting for women everywhere, in addition to Latino women and girls. So big shout out for that. But yeah, this idea of being an advocate, an activist in the circles around you, I think really is a place not just to start, but where we can honestly be the most effective, interrupting those conversations that are happening in your social circle. You talked about being at work and kind of having the same opportunity, and then trying to take the burden off of other people of color who are so used to carrying that burden is, I mean, I can't even imagine like how, what a relief that can be. Actually, I can, because we met when you volunteered to come to NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers. Shout out to Amy and Akshay for coming to do these diversity events when we were at Qualcomm together. And so being an advocate, being an ally, even when no one else around you is doing that, is incredible. So it's awesome to see that you're still that you're still standing up in those spaces for different minority groups, regardless. And I also think it's really cool that you and your friends like looked around and you're like, hey, there's a need. Like, we don't understand this stuff. There's probably other people who don't either. What can we do to help fix that? And so just this general sentiment, this general idea of looking around the space that you're in and seeing a need and then going and filling it. Like, anyone can do that, whether it's large or small, just your social circle or something that ends up expanding more largely. It really doesn't matter because it's going to take all of us for sure in both our small and large actions to do anything about changing the world for the better, for mitigating and eliminating racism. We all have to take those small actions, and those small actions add up. All of our little circles eventually will touch, and we will obliterate and destroy the racism that we are currently swimming in. So,
yeah. So many thoughts and so many funny things came to mind as you were speaking. But I think, and you know, as you were kind of like reflecting back on some of what I said, I realized like growing up, you know, we'd always say like, don't talk about politics, right? Like that's what people would tell you. But now it just feels like the norm, which I really like, right? Like, why not talk about it? What do you mean? It is affecting every single one of us. So even if you're like, if you're getting into uncomfortable moments, eventually they just become comfortable. Like, I don't feel uncomfortable having these conversations with people anymore. And it definitely took time, right? But like listening, being able to listen to someone's opinion that might be different from yours, and then having an educated conversation, it also just forces you to learn, because like you need to have an opinion as well. So that part is at least beautiful. It's like, it's no longer the norm, or it doesn't really feel the norm to be like, no, you shouldn't talk about politics and you shouldn't talk about your opinion on politics.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea of talking to people who have a different opinion than you, I think there's so much opportunity in that. Even just to understand like where they're coming from, so that you can also bring other points and other arguments, you know, information that might be helpful to the table to help expand their views. And then of course you're learning too. Like, none of us know everything about any of these issues. And we're all like in this state of like constant learning and relearning. And I feel like there's a lot of unlearning too. I just watched this TEDx talk on like the three myths of racism, and the three biggest myths. One was that the South is the most racist, that racism will go away when old people die, and then something else. But they're just like, no, that's not, these are not true things. And we have to stop like outsourcing the responsibility of racism to other people, or solving racism to other people. We have to take it on ourselves. So yeah. Yeah, for sure.
No, the other moment when you said earlier about the NSBE thing, it's so funny because when I remember when like we took some days off work and I said, oh, I'm going to the NSBE conference. And someone said, but Amy, you do realize you're not Black. And I was like, yes, I do realize I'm not Black. Why does it matter? Right. And then that moment of like, it shouldn't, again, the burden should not be on a certain group of like, you know, if there's people going, they're taking time off work to ensure that we're like doing the right things to help recruit from certain groups and make sure that we're like pulling in the talent. Is it simple as saying like raising your hand and being like, yeah, this is a good idea. Like, I want to do it too, you know? And it's just maybe making it less scary for people, because at the end of the day, it's talent for your company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wonder if this stems back to the idea that like, if you talk about race, then you're racist. And if you like go and insert yourself like in a place where you don't belong, like then there's some other racist like connotation. But there is no place that we don't belong, especially when you're there to do good work. And flipping it, like if people of color were like, oh, I'm never going to go anywhere where there's a bunch of white people, like we wouldn't be in so many like major spaces. So it's just interesting that it's not considered from both sides. It's really just considered like, oh, white people can't go, or people who aren't Black can't go. Like, absolutely not. You know, we want allies. We want other people to come and help carry the load. And I think that's the same for all minority groups. I went to a AAPI, Asian and Asian Pacific Islander town hall that was hosted by Hello Alice. I just tuned in like yesterday because I'm like, I want to know what issues they're talking about when it comes to COVID, when it comes to the Stop Asian Hate, when it comes to, you know, bias. Like, what are they talking about? It was such an incredible learning experience. Like, I'm going to go and see what other groups I can go and just, you know, show up as an ally. I didn't like raise my hand or ask questions or have to be on the stage. I just wanted to know. Because we share a lot of things, but then there's very specific issues that are based on your culture and your background and, you know, all these other things. So it was fascinating. I'm glad that I went and I didn't feel like, oh, I can't be here because I'm Black. Like, I want to be here because I'm Black and show that we care too, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So Amy, what would you say is like the biggest lesson that you've learned about activism, about anti-racism, about using your voice over this last like year and a half with the pandemic and the election and all the racial unrest? Like, what is the biggest lesson that you've taken away as you walk this talk?
I guess going back a little bit to something I mentioned earlier is that you're going to get tired and it's going to feel like it sometimes does feel like the weight of the world on your shoulders. And I can imagine that many people have been feeling like that over the last year and a half. And that's just really a moment to be kind to yourself and be gracious. I think if you're feeling that burden, it's a good sign in the sense of like, you're a certain type of person that cares, because some people don't feel it at all. And, I think that's sad, right? Not because everyone should be feeling burdened, but because if you don't care about what's going on right now, I don't know what to say anymore. You know, it's just like, I to the people who do feel it. And I think that's been a lesson for me. It's like I said, it's okay to take a little bit of a break. It's okay to like disengage a little bit from social media because it's a lot. It doesn't mean that you're taking a break forever. You're going to come back. You know, that's why like we have people around us, because sometimes you're like, I'm going to tap out for a little bit. You tap in. And then vice versa. I know that's like something I definitely, there were friends that I used to do that with and in different groups where it's like, I'm just exhausted and tired of explaining this. I'm going to take a little bit of break. You go. And, you know, it's just, it's okay. Because we have all these other things going on in our lives. Right. And, I know for me, even like being able to concentrate at work was difficult sometimes. And I had to be like, okay, like you need to be able to concentrate for a little bit to at least feel better. Take a break and, you know, stop looking at all the posts on Instagram and stop feeling guilty because you're not posting today. It doesn't mean that you don't believe in this and it doesn't mean that you're not going to help do something about it. So I think definitely it's like how important, honestly, self-care is in all of this too. And important to show other people that self-care is important and that you're doing it for yourself mm-hmm. too. Because I think there could be a lot of guilt and shaming in it I've seen. But that just like we're now creating something unhealthy and something that should be positive or in a process that should be positive or should have positive outcomes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you just said, because yeah, this, especially when it comes to like social media activism and like just posting and being staying in the know and engaging in the conversations that mm-hmm. that's happening, for people to think about, okay, is this based on how I feel? What's going on? Is this like the best way for me to engage at the time? And then there's also this like fine line. I talk about performative activism a lot, like this fine line between, oh, something else happened, like let me run and post on it. Something yeah. happened, let me run and post. But like if I don't know enough of the information, like I'm just doing it for the sake of it. And you don't want to feel like, oh, I'm just posting because I need a post versus like I'm posting because what I have to say is important and someone needs to hear it. It's just, it's a feeling. It's not even something that you can necessarily see from the outside, but you know the real reason why you're doing different things. And so I also love that you have a really strong friend and community group where you're like, I can't explain this one more time. Like, please just go ahead and handle this for me, please. And they're like, yep, I got you. We're good. It's my turn. So, because the thing is like, I mean, it is exhausting, right? And, you know, people of color don't get to like turn their skin a different color and take a break, right? Like we're constantly under this barrage. You armor up, right? How many times have you heard people talk about like armor up to go to work, armor up to go to the grocery store, armor up to like go wherever you're going. And it takes a big toll. So knowing when you're going to be just like, what do you need to do to refuel yourself so that when it really matters, you can be there and that you can be ready. Because I guarantee anybody who's like, oh, I just need to tap out for a little bit. If something was going down in front of them, they would be like right back there. Like the reserve fuel would be like in the engine and it's go time, right? So just being able to be aware of what you need to take care of your sanity so that you can stay in the fight versus not in there. I mean, I've had several moments of just like breaking down over this past year and a half or so. And you don't even know when it's going to come up on you, right? Because you're like here doing this work and all of a sudden you're just like, you hit this wall and you're just like, I can't, like, I just can't. So no, I totally get that. And it's a real part of the experience for really, I would say all, you know, oppressed groups, all groups that are just trying to fight to be free, just to live, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, Amy. So I have one more question for you today before we wrap up. So for the allies who are out there and, or maybe these are like allies in training or would be allies, they want to figure out what they can do, but they're not sure how, and they're kind of in this like little state of paralysis. So they're not really doing anything right now. They're on the sidelines. What advice do you give to people to help them get off the sidelines and to find their niche in how they can actually create change around them, whether large or small?
I'm trying to think of something that is applicable to everyone. And I guess there one is like identifying the reason why you're stuck, right? Is it feeling like you don't even know why what's happening is happening? I think that piece, like that's education, right? Thankfully, there's a lot on Google. I hear a lot of people of color say this, like, if you only Googled, you know, there's a lot there. And the thing is, you know, that a little bit comes out of frustration because there are so many resources out there, right? There's like, think of something like the 1619 Project, where it talks about the entire history that has put the Black community in this ridiculous system that, you know, today in 2021 is still saying, we just want to be able to go to the store or go on a run and be safe and not die, right? Like there's so much history there that has created this entire system. Learn the history. I think that that's so important because when you don't know the history, it's so easy for people to lie to you, and it's so easy for you to decide, and your opinion is flimsy and your support of certain groups is flimsy because you don't know the real reason why things are happening and the real motivations behind why things happened. So I think education is super important. And the next thing, I think it's a little bit of ego, right? Recognize that you're not educated on these things and it's okay. And like you said earlier, nobody knows everything. I absolutely don't, never will, right? But always taking this approach of wanting to learn and not needing some external event to force you to learn, because I mean, honestly, today it's one group, tomorrow could be your group. Like we just never know. And what are the things that you would want other people to do to understand you? And maybe it's not like, it doesn't have to be racial. It doesn't have to be related to color. It could be related to so many other attributes that identify you, right? There are people with disabilities that feel things that a lot of us who don't have disabilities will never understand. And I think lastly, I mean, there are, again, all the resources, like, you know, if you want to start with the simplest way, they're like nonprofits that are trying to educate people more, that you can either learn from, volunteer with, give back to, even just supporting like certain businesses, like businesses of color. You know, if you're a person who loves to eat out, maybe not just going to like the typical chain or like the big restaurant that everyone's going to, but like really taking the time to maybe appreciate a different culture and like try out something new. Like whatever your interests are, there's some nexus to supporting other groups and other communities. And I think, if you have someone who identifies in any of these groups and they seem like they feel comfortable sharing some of this, I would reach out, right? It's always different. you're able to put a face to an experience. And that's also really important because we're human, right? If somebody that you love and that you care for tells you, like, this is what I've been through, you know, you can ask politely, ask kindly. The person can say, I'm actually not comfortable. I don't want to talk about this. And that's okay. You know, ask kindly. But I think if someone is willing to, that'd be amazing because, like I said, we're human and we feel the emotions of people that we care for. And sometimes that's just private home.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Those are all really great ways. Definitely a lot of people are saying Google. And even really in any of these situations, like even before you go and talk to someone who's close to you, who you trust, who you think might be open to sharing their experiences, if they're feeling comfortable at that time, like go and Google before that. Be like, hey, you know, I did a little research. I like read some things and here's what I'm wondering about, or here's what was confusing. Just so, don't show up with an empty cup. Show up with a cup that's got some, you know, you did a little bit of homework, you did a little bit of work, because there is so much, and I can understand it being overwhelming, but when you're Googling it, number one, Google is incredible now. Like just put in what you're interested in, like just type in those exact words, like it's a sentence, and then don't click the link that says billybobjoe.com. Click the one that says newyorktimes.com, medium.com. Well, even Medium, it depends on who's there, but pick something that is a reputable source, right? Where you're like, oh yeah, I don't know, like Fast Company, they're talking about this. Let me see what this is about, right? Because that'll keep you out of the rabbit holes a little bit better than just like, oh, I'm going to click the first thing and it's, you know, fake news, if you will. So be discerning about the sources that you're using. Find people with degrees and with experiences and backgrounds versus just people with opinions.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing I would add is the reason why people say Google is because think about anything else in the world that's important to you, right? Whether it's a job interview or whether like you're looking for a new facial cream. Like I know me, like I will Google and I will read every single review that I can find, right? It shows that I care. So if you come to someone and you're like, I have a blank slate, like I have no idea, right? That means like you literally, like our generation and anything that comes after has an unlimited amount of information, especially if you're living in the US. And that to me just says, I didn't care enough to like get on my mobile device, which every single one of us has on our hands, and say, how do I approach X conversation? Why is this happening, right? Like, it's just a huge sign of respect or disrespect. If you come to someone and be like, I expect you to educate me. I'm a complete human and adult. And I expect you to like, I came unprepared and I don't really care. That's the message that's sending. And it's not people trying to be disrespectful or rude, but you're sending a message by being unprepared.
That was super well said. Yep. Anything. I just Googled sport headphones, right? Because I care what kind I get. You can Google something before you show up about this topic that hopefully you care about too. So Amy, this was amazing. I love talking to you and I'm so glad that we got to pick your brain around this topic of activism and anti-racism and really how to just activate ourselves in this fight. So is there a place where people can follow you or find you if they want to learn more about you, your experiences, your thoughts on any of these things?
Yeah, I would say LinkedIn is a good place. I don't know that I actively share write anywhere, you know. I do have one blog. One thing that I wrote about the impact, actually, and maybe I should post it on my LinkedIn, but if you just Google me, it's a Medium article on how being first-generation Mexican-American impacted my mental health. And I think it tells a lot of just kind of my evolution in the U.S., U.S. born, but it's still, you know, my Mexican identity is extremely strong. It's, you know, it's one place to look for learning a little bit more without having to ask questions. It's another person's story. So definitely LinkedIn. Amy Villaseñor on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here today, Amy.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.